Over the past 35 years, the American designer Ralph Lauren has built a multi-million dollar empire by selling not just a look, but an entire lifestyle. His vast line of clothing, shoes, home furnishings, and perfumes are all meant to convey a sense of good living and old money. But Lauren's roots are quite different from the aristocratic image he presents in his glossy ad campaigns. He was born in 1939 to Jewish immigrants in the Bronx and grew up sleeping three to a room. He was a small child with a lisp and a lazy eye, often overshadowed by two handsome and athletic older brothers. But Lauren learned how to stand out on his own. He had a flair for putting clothes together, a mind for business, and a driving ambition that eventually revolutionized the way American brands are built. A new book called Genuine Authentic, The Real Life of Ralph Lauren, tells the story of the man behind the well-known label. The author, Michael Gross, joins us now from our studios in New York. Hello, Michael.
Hi, Michelle. Nice to be with you.
The Ralph Lauren we see in those glossy magazine ads and slick marketing campaigns is a far cry from the boy who grew up in the Bronx.
Well, child is the father to man. He is a direct reaction to the childhood that he had growing up in the Bronx. And as I learned in researching the book, he is a direct reaction to his rather extraordinary ancestry as well. Not quite the ancestry that one would guess if one looked at the portraits on the walls of his stores, but an extraordinary ancestry nonetheless.
Those who grew up with him in the Bronx, they didn't know him as Ralph Lauren then.
Little Ralphie Lifschitz. He was called Little Ralphie. His mother, Frieda Lifschitz, would say things like, "So, you like my little Ralphie?" He was the child of two immigrants. They had both come here from the Pale of Settlement, which was the vast Jewish ghetto in the country that's now Belarusia, but at that point was floating between Russia, Austria-Hungary, Poland and Lithuania. Not exactly where you would expect a man named Ralph Lauren to have come from.
He had great ambition even then. Under his high school yearbook, where he was asked his ambition, I think he wrote millionaire.
Well, he'd been fascinated with wealth from the time he was a child. I discovered an interview that he did in which he talked about another kid who grew up in his neighborhood named Mike Steinberg. And the Steinbergs were the wealthy people in the neighborhood. They lived in a building with an elevator. They had a large apartment. They went away on vacations. And all of this was astonishing to Ralph. And the first thing that he had was an ambition to be part of that world, to know about it, to learn about it, to touch it, to feel it, and then to possess it.
You note in your book that he developed a fondness for things with historical integrity. You called them instant heirlooms for the legacy deprived. Is that what he's providing as well with his line of clothing?
Oh, I absolutely do believe that. Lauren comes from a family that left the middle of nowhere with nothing. They came to America and they had to invent themselves. And this is what makes Ralph's story really one of those quintessential tales of American self-invention. They changed their names. They had to live with a new language. They had no heirlooms. They had literally run away from pogroms and Jews being killed in the country that they left. What Ralph's brother, Jerry, the middle brother who actually works for Ralph and runs his men's design division, said was they were searching for things that gave them the sense of being rooted. And what eventually became his great emotional appeal to so many millions of Americans was the fact that he sold these clothes that gave you the impression of having roots, of having a life, a worn pair of khakis, a worn polo shirt, something that seemed to have history, precisely what so many Americans lack.
You sum that up so well in your book. I just want you to read that passage, if you would, for us.
Oh, sure. He reflects who Americans want to be, soft-spoken and modest, and at the same time wildly ambitious and never content. Constantly playing dress-up, the star of his own mental movies, Lauren is at his most authentic and secure when he's lost in one of the quasi-mythical, archetypal roles he loves, immersing himself in imagined worlds, the English country, the American West, the near future, as his defense against the memory of a drab, joyless Bronx boyhood. He's become the ultimate millennium marketing man, selling the promise of self-recreation for the price of a pair of pants.
So he's selling much more than suits and shoes. He's selling a lifestyle.
Well, the suits and shoes are the least of it. It's the dream. He's often said, and he said this to me, I don't sell the dress. I sell the dream.
How did he get his big break?
Well, I think he fought like the devil for it, actually. He made his own break. He was working for a little tie company, and it was the early 60s, and the Beatles had just come out, and Ralph became aware of the fact that in England, there were people selling these things called kipper ties.
Were these the big wide ties?
These were the big wide ties, and Ralph went back to his Boston-based tie company and said, we have to do these wide ties. And the head of the company said to him, slapping him down, the world isn't ready for Ralph Lauren. And he decided to go out and do this on his own. And he found a contractor, and he designed ties out of home decorating fabrics, any fabric he could find, but anything that was different from what ties looked like then. And he put them in a briefcase, and he walked it around the garment center, and he sold them for $1.50 in his local temple. And he pressed, and he pressed, and he pressed, and he would not give up. And Ralph then, within a matter of 2 or 3 years, became the single most important designer sold at Bloomingdale's flagship on 59th Street, which again, remember, in 1966, 67, 68, was the only place to shop in New York.
Is he as good a businessman as he is a designer?
He's become as good a businessman as he is a designer. He, in the early 70s, had a horrific scare when he overexpanded, and his business teetered on the brink of bankruptcy and was actually only saved because a number of department store executives, specifically the heads of Bloomingdale's, Saks Fifth Avenue, and Neiman Marcus, banded together and agreed to basically pull his chestnuts out of the fire by advancing him money on clothing that he had not yet even produced for a season that was still months away.
Why were they willing to do that?
Because they believed in him. And this is the important point, is that Marvin Traub of Bloomingdale's saw his future in this man, Ralph Lauren. They believed that his vision of fashion would prove successful. And they were absolutely right, because today Ralph Lauren products sell $10 billion at retail around the world every year.
Is he as popular as he's ever been?
Oh, certainly. Look at what he's done. The name Polo, the name Ralph Lauren, that little man on the polo pony. Those are things that are known around the world. You can't walk down a street anywhere in the world without seeing one of Ralph Lauren's logos.
Michael, thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure to be here.
Michael Gross is the author of Genuine Authentic, The Real Life of Ralph Lauren.